Salutations, my friends, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Factions of Freedom. Let me tell you, this is definitely going to be one of the more epic episodes that we've got lined up for you. I don't want to spoil any surprises, but the title definitely does not do it justice. But before we jump into things, I'm going to say make sure you're checking out all of the links in the description bar below. Make sure you're checking out the website to make sure you're getting the most out of everything that we're putting out. So with that being said, let's get right into it. We'll go from there. All right. Salutations, my friends, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Factions of Freedom. I'm your host, Noiser, Freedom Faction, whichever one you prefer, and I'm actually joined by my awesome friend, Billy Carson of Forbidden Knowledge. Mr. Carson, how are you?
Fantastic, man. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure having you on. We got a lot of different things to talk about, you know, the development with Bitcoin, space, travel, all this other stuff that's going on, the economy. But before we get into all of that stuff, you know, let's, you know, as always, let the people know who you are. Get them kind of caught up to what you're doing, because last time we talked to you, you were shipping planes off to Puerto Rico and getting supplies to people.
Right. We did a lot since then, man. I mean, we really did that. Well, for everybody who doesn't know who I am, my name is Billy Carson. I'm the founder of Forbidden Knowledge. I'm also the founder of Pantheon Elite Records, which is a conscious record label, and the founder of First Class Space Agency, which is a nonprofit space agency based out of Florida that is registered with the European Space Agency and also NASA. I'm a researcher. I'm an expert host on Gaia TV's Deep Space, and also I'm an expert host on Gaia TV's Ancient Civilizations. Those are two original series by Gaia. And I've also been on Beyond Belief by George Noori, and I've been on Coast to Coast AM twice now. So I'm considered one of the world's top researchers in archaeoastronomy and astroanthropology. And some of the information that I put out, content that I put out, is taught in schools.
Yeah, so he's a very, very important man. And that's why, like as always, I'm saying I'm grateful that he's able to come up over here, drop his two cents, and get us caught up to what he's doing.
Man, appreciate it, bro.
I also got that Gaia membership. I've definitely been watching the Deep Space program and some of I really do like George Noori's Beyond Belief show. That is I like that idea. He's really got that very well played out, and I like seeing you on there as well.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. I love being on there. Man, they invited me back to come, you know, do it again. So I'm gonna be back out there probably sometime in February or March, and I'll be on for another hour and a half with George Noori, talking about more crazy stuff.
Isn't that what it's always about? And you know, the last time you were on, you were talking about how you were working on your book. How's the development on that?
The book is coming along phenomenal. It's definitely going to be done before the Conscious Life Expo. I'll be speaking at the Conscious Life Expo on February the 10th in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Airport Hilton. And I'm going to have a book signing as well that same day, right after I do my lecture. And then that evening, we're going to do a conscious concert at the same venue at 11 o'clock, right after David Wilcock gets done speaking, doing his lecture. We're then going to go ahead and take over and do the conscious concert that night. So it's going to be an amazing event.
So I just have to ask, you know, what's it like kind of just being able to bump elbows with like all these different type of people?
Oh, man, I'm still starstruck, believe it or not, man. I mean, Eric Von Daniken, David Wilcock. I mean, he's just, you know, Greg Braden, you know. It's amazing, man. You know, it's really, really a true law of attraction in my life, because these are all the people that I had started researching and studying from and saying that I've got to meet these people and work with these people because I felt I had something to contribute to the community, to the conscious community, and I felt that I needed to do it at the highest level. And I really was saying that I really need to get around these people. And lo and behold, now that thought manifested into reality. So it's so exciting, man. But I just tell you, man, I'm really starstruck and still, you know, I act normal around them, but you know, it's really it's really amazing to be around all these people and, you know, that are really doing big things and, you know, and writing, you know, best-selling books and, you know, all this stuff. It's really a trip.
that's what it's about. I mean, you're influencing the next generation while you're already just like trying to play catch up to the other people that have been blowing down the doors. So I mean, you're an inspiration the same way you're trying to chase your inspiration. That's how it works. I'm honored to even be able to have these kinds of conversations with you.
Oh man, I appreciate it, man. I'm humble, man. I'm just so happy that that people want to hear my voice, you know. And it's just amazing because I was just looking at my Instagram and my Facebook stats in terms of the insights yesterday, actually. And I saw that the Instagram insights on a 7-day cycle just on Forbidden Knowledge was reaching almost 8 million people in 7 days.
Wow.
You know, it just blew me away. And now I'm up to over 702,000 followers on Instagram. And on Facebook, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 million people are reached per post. And the interaction over there is just ridiculous. You know, 1 week and 1.6 million video views. And the numbers are through the roof. It's just really showing me that one person can reach out to the world and touch a percentage of the world on a daily basis. You know, so I'm really thankful for the opportunity, man, and just so happy that people are open and receptive to hearing what I have to say, because it could be the other way around. It could be like, you know, whatever. Nobody, but they're listening and sharing and learning and asking questions and sending emails on a daily basis. I get anywhere from 300 to 400 emails a day.
Wow.
You know, in messages and texts and everything else. It's a lot.
So have you come up with a name for the book yet, or are you still kind of hovering over
that? Yeah, it's going to be Summary of the Emerald Tablets.
Summary of the Emerald Tablets?
It's going to be called Summary of the Emerald Tablets. I might modify it slightly here or there, but I think it's pretty much the gist of it. And it's 15 chapters, and it breaks down every single tablet from the Emerald Tablets of Thoth in a way that I don't think has ever been done before, to lend, first of all, credibility to the text and the tablets themselves, the history of them, where they came from, who all touched them, who's read them, who's been involved with them, how did they get here, the true history of the tablets, because that's the biggest question. It seems so ambiguous because nobody has really dug too deep into the research of the tablets. But this, I went all the way in on that. And then a lot of people aren't able to understand what's being told, with the metaphysics and the esoteric messages that are being transmitted through the tablets. So I do a good job in breaking it down and trying to make people understand what's being said in each tablet. So there's 15 tablets, and so there's 15 chapters. I think it'll be a very easy read, and I think people's eyes will be open to understand a lot better as to what's in there and what's being said. And I've got a couple other really good tidbits in it that are going in. Plus, I'm working on a one-hour video about it that's going to be produced professionally. So I'll have a video, which I don't know if that's going to end up on Netflix or Gaia or where that will end up, but it'll end up in a nice place that's reputable, and that will go along with the back of the book.
And for some people who are kind of, initiates, new researchers who are coming up new to this, to the Emerald Tablets, you know, can you explain how it's kind of like, it talks about Atlantis, it talks about space, mm-hmm. it talks about a lot of different things. And yeah. So, you know, like you said, you're trying to basically condense that and make it more approachable, more easily digestible. Can you explain to people in a quick summary of summary of the Emerald Tablets?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The Emerald Tablets of Thoth were written by an Atlantean named Thoth, T-H-O-T-H. His father is Enki. And if you research the Emerald Tablets, if you research the Sumerian Tablets, you find out who Enki is. He actually, Earth is named after him. His name is Ea Enki, Ea Enki. We actually, for short, called it Ea, and then they call him Ea, and then we ended up adding it, you know, A-R-T-H, so it's Earth. But his son, going back, I'm talking about tens of thousands of years, was commissioned by his father to go out to the land of the barbarians in the land of Kem, which was ancient Egypt before it was even Egypt. We're talking about 50,000, 60,000 years ago. And he was told to bring that area to a high level of civilization. That was the mission he was sent on. It actually said that the most important part about the Emerald Tablets is the evidence of technology, because the first thing it says in that first tablet is that he got into the ship, and they ascended. In other words, they went up. They didn't go out into the ocean or to a lake. They went up. They ascended into the sky. And then as they approached the temple that they already had built in this area, they saw the barbarians beneath them. So again, this is a ship that flies. and then they descended down to the ground. And when they opened the door, these barbarians came to attack him, and with clubs and so forth. And then here's the first, you know, real amazing evidence of some type of a weapon in ancient times. He says that he raised his staff and sent out a ray of vibration, stopping them still as stone in the mountain. So right here we have evidence of some type of a stun gun that he, you know, sent out a beam to stun these people and stop them from attacking. And then once he subdued them, he sat them down. He began to speak peace to them and told them that they were children of the sun, and they were there to teach them things and so forth. So it's just an amazing account of ancient technology, ancient advanced people coming here to this planet from wherever they came. A real, true global Atlantean society, not just a ring city that, you know, we've heard about from Plato, but it was global, and we have evidence of that all over the world. We even have Proto-Sumerian pots that were discovered in Mexico, you know, so we've got the Proto-Sumerian writing on them in cuneiform. So it's just an amazing story, man, and I think people really need to understand that in that book of, you know, that Thoth wrote himself, in those tablets, is all the wisdom and understanding you need to live on this planet and have a good life and to enlighten others and share knowledge with others, as well as what to do in case you get in trouble, what to do in case you're suffering. All that's in the tablets. And the most ironic thing about the tablets that people are going to be shocked is, in the New Testament of the Bible, where Jesus is speaking, his words, which were written less than 2,000 years ago, match up to Thoth's words in the Emerald Tablets written over 36,000 years ago. So which came first, the chicken or the egg? So this is going to be an amazing, you know, series, and I think and book, and people are going to really get a big eye opener and start to realize that there's a lot more going on than what they thought, you know. And Thoth is the bringer of wisdom, and always has been, and evidence of him can be found all over the globe. Australia, Ireland, Greece, of course, Egypt, Mexico. Wherever you go on this planet, you're going to find evidence of Thoth. You know, I'm going to Angkor Wat in Cambodia. There's depictions of him there. It's just amazing. So it's an amazing epic, and I'm looking forward to bringing it to the world.
I mean, I will definitely be checking out. You know, one of the things I think is awesome, you know, whenever I check out Gaia, I forget which episode it was, but you pointed out one of the facts that you can see the development of these entities. You can see the development of their technology throughout our own history. So you can see, like, different parts of whatever this off-world, extraterrestrial, or otherworldly force is. You can see it coming in from having, like you said, ships, space rockets and ships like that, to smooth disks to where they're, like, you know, flying off of the vibrations, and all kinds of different advanced technologies. I think that's just, you know, one of the crazier things that you pointed out, the same way that we're able to hear how they have a stun gun or some kind of, you know, vibratory freeze gun. I'm not sure. some advanced technology. But it seems like that's definitely an ongoing theme. Like, we're having to play catch up with our history that's way more advanced than we think advanced is today.
Right. Very true. Yep.
So what do you think about the idea, you know, of if anything, I think this will be a good way for us to kind of jump into Bitcoin and everything else that we see happening. We know they're trying to make a breakaway civilization. We also see them talking about things like life extension, free energy, renewable energy, and things like this, trying to basically get into harmony with the planet and unlocking the secrets of the universe through that. What do you think about the idea of them trying to sell us free energy?
Well, you know, it's probably going to be one of the things that happens. I mean, there's a few things that are going to happen if we don't take back control of this planet. The first thing that they're going to do is they're going to try to sell us all of these new technologies, because they're going to start to begin to reveal that these technologies are not only accessible to the general public, but should be given out to the general public. But they're going to find a way to meter it, unfortunately, because they're going to claim the administration costs and this and that and so forth and so on. They're going to find a way to make money off of it, which could have been done a very long time ago. Actually, I wish it would have been done a long time ago, even if we were paying for it, just to keep the planet green. But the other thing that really doesn't frighten me as much as something else, which is called life extension, they've now learned how to basically stop the telomeres in chromosome number 2 from shrinking, which means that they can extend the life of a human almost indefinitely. They've already done this in lab rats and mice at the University of Harvard. So if you can make a person live 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 10,000 years, now all of a sudden, if we don't take back control of this planet, eventually what the elites are going to start doing, they're going to start selling us time. And that's something that can really, truly happen on this planet if people don't wake up. And there's a movie that came out, ironically, years ago with Justin Timberlake. I think it was called Time or something like that, where literally the elites were selling time. And if you were poor, you didn't live that long. And some of these elites were living 3,000, 4,000 years. You know, and I think in the movie, his mom was running out of time, and he had to go steal some time some kind of way and then get it to his mom, but I think he got there too late. But it was a very eye-opening movie for me. Now here we are, fast forward to the future, where now this just happened. They now have a way to extend our lives that long, and besides just the telomeres, we now have the capability of making paralyzed people walk by putting a Bluetooth chip in the brain and a receiver on the limb that's not working, or the limbs that aren't working. And now through thought power, you can literally get up and walk, move your arm, drink your coffee, whatever you need to do. So we have that. We have new 3D technology, 3D printing technology, which is so advanced it can print veins, it can 3D print kidneys and lungs and hearts. And we can jumpstart them. We can jumpstart a heart and make it work. We don't even need to do blood transfusions anymore. We can actually create blood. So we're at the point now where a person, like in the ancient, in the Emerald Tablets, when Thoth was talking about transferring his consciousness into other bodies, could this be what he was doing, creating new bodies using, you know, the technology that we're just now finding out about now, and transferring his consciousness into them? Just like in Russia, they've already transferred a monkey's consciousness into a computer, and the monkey thinks it's alive. That's crazy. So we're at now the point where we can literally put a brain consciousness into a computer. Eventually it'll be into a robotic body, and then eventually it'll be into some type of a bio android, you know, or something like that.
Some kind of surrogate.
Surrogate, where it looks like a real person, talks, sounds, and feels and everything else, but it's artificial. So we're getting to that point now, and like I said, we have to take back control of this planet in order for these things to pan out and benefit humanity versus become a detriment to humanity.
This is when we start to get into things like, you know, transhumanism, biohacking, designer babies, and, you know, all these different things. There's a game coming out called Transhuman Space, and it's basically everything we're talking about right here. How, you know, in the future, if and when we do go out into space, we won't necessarily be the humans we are today because of things like that. You know, we have to look at keeping the planet green, you know, things like our health, our bodies. How come they can't, you know, exist out there in space? They're doing all kinds of different things, not only terrestrially, but preemptively and in the future, to create this long-term eugenics program to change us. And like you said again, you know, with things like consciousness transference, biohacking, and using the technology to basically transcend humanity. That's what transhumanism is. We're looking at this future become more and more real. And I didn't know this was actually talked about in the Emerald Tablets. Like, those talked about consciousness transference.
Oh, absolutely. He talks about transferring his consciousness to new bodies. He also talks about the halls of Amenti, which are underneath the Great Pyramid at Giza, which they have discovered now, about 300 chambers underneath there, where he said he would go into for 100 years at a time to renew his body, and he did it 100 times. So that's 100,000 years over, you know, broken out over eons, that he's gone in, he'll go in for 100, come back out, go in for 100, come back out, you know, for a few thousand or whatever. And so he's done that for 100,000 years. He's gone into this regeneration chamber. And I guess when he gets tired of a particular body, he just goes ahead and transfers into another avatar. And he talks about that in the Emerald Tablets.
Now, one of the questions I have, you know, because all of this is awesome to me thinking about it, you know, us basically trying to play catch up to it. I think one of the X-Men movies, I think it's X-Men Apocalypse, where they actually, you know, had that, the consciousness transference system there as well. You know, was Thoth considered like a alien, or was he actually terrestrially born? And one of that, when I asked that, he was.
Well, he was from wherever his dad was from. Some say Nibiru, some say Sirius, some say the Pleiades, some say Orion. You know, it just depends on your translation of the Sumerian tablets. But either way, he came here, you know, with his dad, Enki. His brother was Marduk, who's Amun-Ra. When people say Amen at the end of every prayer, that's who they're giving thanks to, one of the most brutal rulers this planet has ever seen. He forced everybody to say Amen at the end of every prayer and to give thanks to him for everything, because he was the one God. He was the one that ushered in monotheism and then convinced Akhenaten, who was under him, a pharaoh underneath him, probably his son, most likely a half human, half Anunnaki, to then go and deface all the noses and murals anywhere they could that had other gods, which were his relatives, and depict the sun as the god, which was his disc. It was actually a disc. It wasn't the sun, the yellow sun. It was actually a disc that he lived in. He often stated that he lived in the sky. He didn't like coming down on the planet that often. He lived mostly inside of this ship that was up in the sky, which was a disc, and that was the sun disc that was referenced. But a lot of people think that the noses were all broken off because Napoleon and all these other guys. No, it was broken off way before Napoleon and these guys, and it wasn't broken off by Caucasians because they didn't want black people to know, that, you know, they had black noses. It was ordered by Amun-Ra and then carried out by Akhenaten.
Forbidden Knowledge, 528 DNA.
Forbidden Knowledge.
Forbidden Knowledge.
Answers. One of the things I'm thinking about, you know, is us playing catch up with this technology. Like, that's just something that keeps sticking out to me. Why is it that it seems like it has alien origins, this kind of technology and its purposes here on the planet, but it definitely seems like it also enlightens and adds value to the quality of life amongst the humans that are there. It seems like there are also different sects of controlling powers on the planet at the same time. I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, again, with the technology and how we see it paralleling today, with things like consciousness transference, with things like them putting themselves off UFOs, putting themselves in the sky, basically trying to watch over us, lord over us. Do you think the people who are running the deep state, running the military industrial complex, or this breakaway civilization, do you think they're trying to do that today, trying to mimic basically history?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt. They literally have analyzed, broken down, studied, researched for many, many decades all of the ancient Sumerian tablets, the Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, the Indian Vedas, the Ning Li, everything they can get their hands on. They've really not only just studied them and broken them down, but tried to replicate the technology. All the Vimanas, all of that stuff, everything they got from Project Paperclip, because that's exactly what the Germans went to go do as well. They went on a mission to find all this ancient technology, and they discovered it, and they discovered how to build it, and that's why the United States took a hold of those scientists and then brought it in-house. So that's their main focus. The first place that they went when they went to Iraq for the quote-unquote weapons of mass destruction mission was they went to the Saddam Hussein's museum. That's the first place they went, was to the museum, blew it open, went down to the deepest chambers and took tons and tons of antiquities out of there. And then the second place they went was to the Ziggurat of Ur, which a friend of mine was actually on that mission and took photos, which I have photos of that. And they went there and took a device out of the Ziggurat of Ur, which looked like a stargate, you know, the outer ring of a stargate. Very old, though. Extremely, extremely old. They put it in the back of a truck, covered it up with a tarp, and it disappeared out of sight. It took it away to wherever it's at now. But that may have been the weapon of mass destruction. It might have been an ancient stargate that they want to figure out if they can figure out how to make it work. But, you know, so they know about all the ancient stuff, and now their main goal is to replicate this stuff and bring it into current times. Now, the only place that they're messing up is, see, the Anunnaki were a little bit smarter, because what they used to do, they used to use humans as cattle. And what now the military-industrial complex is doing is they're trying to make everything robotic.
Yes.
And that's the problem. I think the Anunnaki knew that it was better to use real biology and that you can program, you can control psychologically, versus computers that can think for themselves and may say, you know what, humans should be obsolete, let's get rid of them. You know, so I think this is where we're messing up as a species. We're trying to get to Skynet, and I don't think that's the right way to go.
So, because I definitely want to jump on that, you know, the understanding of the mentalities, you know, how we're using robots versus in the past, they're actually using the human energy, human consciousness, and things like this. Mentioned that the Anunnaki's, you mentioned stargates and things of this nature. Multiple dimensions, do you think they're real? Do you think that that's possibly where these entities come from and provide the energy or provide the information?
Well, I think there's two forms. I think you have, there's many different alien races that visit this planet. Some are regular, just third dimensional beings. I believe that the Anunnaki are just third dimensional beings, just like us. In other words, we look like them. They genetically engineered us from an existing hominid on this planet. But what I found through my research is bipedal bilateral hominids are abundant in the entire universe in the third dimension. Bipedal bilateral hominid, meaning, you know, standing, you know, if you cut me in half, I have two equal sides, I have two legs and two arms. If I cut a dog in half, same thing, you know, right down the middle of a cat, whatever. That structure is like a standard structure for a level of intelligence throughout the entire universe. And it's been written about also in the Tara Papers, an ancient Indian epic, which talks about the same thing that we're talking about now. And now, so you have those third dimensional entities, and I think that they were true third dimensional entities because they had flesh and blood. They can get hurt, they can die, they can get wounded, and so forth and so on. We found skulls and body parts and everything else. Now, I also believe that there are multidimensional beings which have the capability of coming in from other dimensions by means of phase shifting their atomic structure to match the frequency of this dimension and stepping right in to this, whatever technology they have to step right into this dimension. And so I think we're being visited by multidimensionals as well. So there's a combination of multidimensionals and third dimensional, people that have been visiting and interacting with mankind. The multidimensionals, I believe, are more like archons talked about the non-Kamadi scripts, which were discovered, and talking about these entities that actually feed off of frequencies and energies of man, or any being that has turmoil. The negative energies is what they actually eat. They feed off of that. And then you have the third dimensional beings like the Anunnaki, who I think were just advanced people about 1 million years ahead of us in terms of technology and understanding of how the universe works.
Fascinating. And you talked about how, with the Anunnaki, they used humans for their experiments, as chattel, let's be real, They actually sent the humans out to conduct their types of experiments. And what we're doing today, I think what we're actually slowly starting to realize, or that they're trying to reluctantly get to, is that they need the human component. We can't have machines do everything. And this is why they're trying to roll out the machines today, because we're seeing a entire shift and how we approach science and how we approach politics and how we approach the environment and things of this nature. We're really trying to take into consideration the human factor. Like you said, the Anunnaki knew this, and now we're slowly coming to this. There's the spiritual science, the things of the aura, the chakras, different parts of your body, and this is a good way for us, if anything, to talk about your documentary with Tortured Fruit, how we're looking at our diet today, all the different things that we're talking about, they're third dimensional beings and multidimensional beings. I feel like that's very real. You got to join me on this. I'm going to make a long draw with these lower vibrational entities. They kind of get attached to the meat. That's why they say don't eat pork, even in the Bible, because it's contained with all kinds of different toxins and poisons and things of this nature. There's a lot of different spiritual problems associated with just eating bad meat itself, and then you throw in all the different chemicals, the steroids, the hormonal injectors, and everything else they add. They're making a spiritual and chemical biological cocktail that just messes us up in so many different ways. And so these different dimensional entities, the ones that do feed on the fear, the ones that do bleed through, that are seeking out this negative energy, we're acting as the perfect beacons for them. And so then whenever we switch up to different things like your page, plant-based alternatives, holistic life, vegan lifestyle, even vegetarian lifestyle, something to where we get off of this cataclysmic style diet, we're actually able to notice not only a physical change, but a spiritual change. The law of attraction, it works differently. Does that make sense?
Oh, you hit it right on the head, man. It's total, you nailed it, man. You just nailed it. I mean, it's totally right. And that's pretty much what the documentary is about, Tortured Fruit. When I get done with it, it's going to involve psychologists, neurologists, biologists, and we're really going to analyze man's psyche. And I know, going back, like I was saying earlier, into the Sumerian tablets and finding out that mankind was originally vegetarian. And that's really truly what we're supposed to be, because meat eaters like lions and tigers and so forth, they have very short intestines. The food goes in and comes right out. And human beings have, yards and yards and yards of intestines. It's not designed for meat to go down there and get stuck in the crevices and corners and cause cancers and all kind of other things. But it's really going to go in depth into the psyche of man and how eating meat has changed the way a human being thinks, functions, and also has altered the lifespan, the natural lifespan of a human being. Even though the Anunnaki capped the lifespan at 120 years within the telomeres in chromosome number 2, which has just been discovered in Harvard University as being a fact, we should still then be living up to 100, 120 years with no problem. But instead, what's happening, we're struggling to get over 70. A lot of the people that I went to high school with are already dead. I graduated in 1988. So that's pretty horrible, man. So it's going to really dig in deep into that, and it's also going to analyze a little bit about the mad cow disease that occurred, where cows were being fed meat, and how all of a sudden a vegan animal, you know, became mentally ill. And I think that the fact of eating meat over many eons has really created a psychosis in mankind and given us such a low vibrational frequency that these entities are living off of. We've literally become a beacon. It's like when you set up your first nuclear bomb, that sends out a signal into space that goes on forever, and other technologically advanced societies go, oh my God, they learn how to split an atom. Let's go see what they're doing. It's the same thing when it comes down to, eating meat and for all these years and getting these low frequencies that these other entities can grab onto and feed off of. Not only that, it allows the elites to really rule over mankind in a way, because you're mentally not strong and you're mentally weak and you don't live long enough to learn lessons. The longer you live, the more lessons you learn, the smarter you become. And this is why in the Tower of Babel incident, when Enki and Enlil came back, and Enlil saw them building a tower to the sky, which was a spaceport, really, in my opinion, he destroyed it. And then he says it in the Sumerian tablets, and it's been plagiarized in the Bible, where he says, "Man, my spirit will not abide in mankind forever. Their years shall be 120. It's in the Sumerian tablets first, and then thousands of years later in the Bible. This is when he capped the telomeres. Because they realize that if you can live 200, 300, 400,000 years, all of a sudden you can accomplish a lot of things over that kind of time. You can wake up. And they said, we can't have this. We got to limit them. And I think the elites have taken it another step further and kind of kept us to that 70 to 80 range. And, you know, because anything more than that, people might begin to, you know, begin to wake up to a point where they can make some serious changes on this planet. And they keep you sick and weak through the food. So that's kind of what it's going to be about. And I think it's going to be a unique take on the way that the meat is affecting the psyche of man. I'm also going to go into why we're eating meat. I don't think people realize how it even happened. What happened was the Anunnaki, who masqueraded as gods on this planet, used to ask for offerings of the meat that they basically brought to this planet, lambs and cows and so forth, domestic animals. So you as a farmer had to go out there, kill your cow, kill your calf, bleed it out and so forth, and bring it as an offering. And if you had fields of wheat and farm goods and fruits and so forth, you brought your best offering. Those offerings that they were bringing to the Anunnaki was the Anunnaki's food. This is why they introduced meat to the culture, so that people can eat meat as well as bring them food. You know, it was a way for them to get their food, because they weren't going to get out there and go kill a cow and butcher it. And I learned this when I went to Egypt from one of the pyramid priests in 2014. And it was an amazing revelation, because it made so much sense that the Anunnaki were literally just getting all these offerings that these Jewish people and everybody else were given. It was just for food to eat. I was like, oh my goodness, this is an amazing revelation. So it's going to be deep, man. I can't wait to get it completed.
It definitely sounds like it's going to be pretty, pretty heavy. You said you're going to have all kinds of scientists and doctors and all kinds of a whole pantheon of people on too, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
I think it's good that you're also touching on, you know, again, life extension, how we're supposed to have at least 100 years here. But they've cut that down severely because it's just that, because of this diet. Yeah. One of the things that I was thinking about while you were talking about us being on this meat eater diet, the mad cow disease, and how that all bioaccumulates in us. You know, we hear how they talk about reincarnation, and like we're touching on with consciousness transference. I'm sure if we had 120 years here in harmony, we could figure out deeper spiritual truths like that. Things like consciousness transference, how to basically put your body in a hibernative state and go travel to different planes. I mean, in today's society, to where we think we have advanced technology because we have a pocket stick of radiation in our phone, which still cuts down on our life, we think that we're so advanced. But some extraterrestrial race or something, some higher spiritually evolved entities some different kind of consciousness, it could manifest here. But because of everything that we have in front of us, how we've just been conditioned and indoctrinated and brainwashed, there's no way that we could probably like perceive some of these things right now. It's right. Just, I don't know, it just blows my mind to think of like the different densities in which life can manifest. I have a lot of people that ask me like if I think aliens exist, and I say, well, what do you think about, well, what counts as an alien? And we're touching it over here, third dimensional beings, multidimensional beings, entities that are manifesting, you know, people that are transferring consciousness. What is considered alien? And that's something I think a lot of people end up getting confused. So that just blew my mind right there. So if anything, let's springboard into one of the reasons I wanted to have you on. Let's springboard into Donald Trump talking about this new space directive. Now, I know I think everybody's got their relationship with Donald Trump, but I think we need to talk about what that means, him saying that we're going back to the moon. And I know there's a lot of controversy surrounding moon and the Mars and everything else, but like I said, I think we need to encapsulate what that means, not only for the quality of life, like we've been talking about here, but also the advancement of what we think of as technology as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really important that I think that they may have, first of all, to be able to say that we're going back to the moon, I believe that there has been a negotiation made, because there are people living on the moon. And that's not fallacy. That's not a mystery. If you download the Apollo 11 black box tapes, which were given out through the Freedom of Information Act, you can get the PDF file from the black box, which has some redacted areas on it, but there are some very good areas that are not redacted yet. And you can also listen to the actual voice file. The parts that are not redacted are very clear. As they're going over the moon, they say that those are some very interesting craters, the conical ones. Now, a conical crater means that they're talking about a dome structure. And then Niels goes ahead and says, the people down there, they probably never get out. You know, that's just one of the many tapes that we have. We also have the tape of them, of Buzz actually saying, they've landed across the crater and they're watching us. This is when they, you know, landed on the moon. They got out and people landed across the crater. And then we have Norman Bergeron, who in an interview with Project Camelot, who says that he saw that footage and saw 7 to 8 foot tall black people getting out of these ships watching Buzz walk on the moon. And he was adamant about it. You know, so, and this is the guy who was the head leader of Ames Research. I mean, this is a big time guy. His Wikipedia and his bio goes on for miles, you know. So the fact that we're going back to the moon tells me that there has been a negotiation made or an agreement, something made. And we have been in communication with the people up there for a very long time, because we put a satellite disc or disc on the, a receiving disc on the moon, and we have been sending documented laser signals to that disc of information, beaming information back and forth. They made that public record that they're beaming information to this receiver dish up there. Why would you be beaming content or data to the moon? It doesn't make any sense. Well, it makes sense if you understand that there's a communication going on. And then there was the Arecibo radar footage that we got, we meaning the United Family of Anomaly Hunters, and analyzed and saw that we penetrated about 30 meters below the moon's surface with the radar and saw clear, massive structures underneath the surface of the moon. So there's people living beneath the surface of that moon. So there's been some type of negotiation or agreement made. And we're going to go back there and we're going to experiment, probably exchange information or learn from these people or peoples or whatever they are. And also another reason is for protection. There's going to be some, while we're going as a front, okay, we're going to the moon and we're going to develop these technologies, the back end is always going to be military based. So you're going to see a lot of Navy involvement, Air Command, you know, U.S. Air Command, U.S. Space Command involvement.
Yep.
So they could be setting up a whole infrastructure for protection of the Earth against outside forces. And why would they want to do that? Well, if you read the Emerald Tablets, Felt literally says in the Emerald Tablets that far in the future, there's going to be some evil forces that are going to come to attack this planet. You know, for whatever reason, maybe it's a warring race, or maybe it's people are coming back to try to take over the planet. Whatever the case may be, but he said that in the Emerald Tablets, and a lot of the texts talk about these people coming back. And I think they want to be ready for them if there's going to be a war, because they are a warring race that's been documented over and over again in all the ancient texts. There's always wars going on, a lot of big ones too. So I think that's a strategic place to be, is on the moon to set up weapons of whatever type that they're going to decide to set up. And at the same time, you get advancement of technology. You get to learn about, how to establish a base, up there. You get to experiment with 3D printing, which they now have on the U.S., on the ISS. It has a 3D printer, one of the most advanced 3D printers.
Yep.
So now they're going to be printing things up there in space, and any other technology that they can use to develop, whether it be free energy devices, perpetual motion generators. All of these things can be developed, which are going to eventually benefit us as it trickles down. You know, it'll trickle down to us, and we'll get our hands on it. It'll benefit us as we advance. But they're always going to be 300 years ahead of us in terms of technology. But it definitely is a big benefit. And then you have moon. The moon can be a quick jump to Mars, especially if you're going to develop some type of a craft in outer space that can be extremely large. Maybe you want to go from beyond Mars. Maybe you want to go past the asteroid belt. So it's a lot. It's really a huge undertaking. And I think it's a good thing. In my personal opinion, I really think it's a good thing, because I'll be able to get a lot more data and research material that I can analyze, and I can discern my own realities and what's really going on, versus not getting anything at all, you know?
I agree. I feel like what we've been dealing with, you know, NASA lies and all the other nonsense for years, where we've been never getting a straight answer from NASA for years. And mm-hmm. I feel like now, you know, with things like SpaceX, Blue Origin, and now these new different space directives, like you said, we're going to have so much different access to technology. I mean, I think it's pretty much well known. Everybody understands that a lot of the black budget has built a lot of these UFOs. That's what the military-industrial complex is. Lockheed Martin, Skunk Works, DARPA, all these different places. That's it. That's what they do. They've taken trillions of dollars, and they've made different types of UFOs. They've built up this space program. They're doing all these different types of things. You know, like you said, they're at least 300 years ahead of us in the future with technology. But even then, they're still playing catch up to this previous technology that we talked about in the first part of the show. Where we find ourselves at today is just that, going back to the moon. And like you said, finding that there are structures there, finding that there are still inhabitants there. I firmly believe that we got kicked off. I'm definitely in that category. I don't think we didn't go back. We got kicked off. That's the only thing I can really say.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Do you think it was the Nazis that are on there, or you said that there was another race?
It's the Anunnaki. They in one of the epics that I read, there was a war. I forget the name of this particular ruler now, but Him and his bloodline were banished from the Earth and were banished to go live on the moon. They've been there ever since. Now, there's also evidence of a war. Now, when the last Pyramid War happened and Amun-Ra escaped, there was a nuclear war on Earth, which evidence of that is in the Indus Valley at Mohenjo-Daro. And also, because you have the vitrified buildings, vitrified sand, and you also have dead bodies still laying in the street right now holding hands, where they fell. And as well, when you go to Egypt, where I went, on Giza, you put your hands into the sand, you pick up balls of glass, which means it was a 3,000 plus degree heat that hit that sand to turn it into glass. And it's all over the place. So the evidence of that ancient nuclear war is here. And I think that it wasn't just a planetary war. I think it was a galactic war that spread from Earth to the moon, to Mars, to Tiamat, which is now the asteroid belt, and even beyond. It's just we're dealing with a highly, highly warring race, which is probably why you see us as humans warring with each other all the time, because that DNA is in our body. We have the same DNA as these people. So we're like they're like our progenitors. So it's in our nature to want to create. It's in our nature to want to advance technologically. It's in our nature to not want to be enslaved, because why? They weren't slaves. This is why we always revolt against slavery, because they themselves were kings and queens and princesses and so forth, and they weren't slaves. So they put that non-slave DNA into our body and made us non-slaves as well. So even though they coded us to be subservient and everything else, there's still that deep, deep thing inside of us, inside of our DNA, that wants us to expand consciousness, that wants us to not be enslaved, and it wants to travel the stars. I think the stars are calling to us all the time. I know it calls to me 24/7, and you know, it's just I hope that there is a life extension that I can get my hands on, because I definitely want to be able to get my feet on Mars, at least get to Mars.
I hear that. You know, one of the crazier things that I've learned doing all this type of stuff is a lot of people have beliefs, and then we act in the constant state of double-mindedness. We have beliefs, but we don't want to achieve dreams, and it's the weirdest thing. But with all these tools and technologies, you know, at our disposal, we just somehow try to find ways to limit ourselves. I was talking to this guy the other day on a whole separate show, and we were talking about the concept of our history, you know, what it would actually look like if we were talking to aliens, if we were talking to flesh and blood, extraterrestrials, if we were, like, obviously if they were watching us, clearly they can see the mentality of us. They know our temperament. They're probably here to some degree.
Yeah.
I mean, Dr. David Jacobs talks about it. You know, you can look at the whole alien agenda, hybrid program, all the other stuff that comes with that as well. You know, it's definitely there. Yeah. But then you start getting this sense of, like, well, where is the wisdom that comes with that? Where is the actual, you know, understanding and beauty, the knowledge that comes with knowing you are not alone?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, even though we have these deeper understandings of it, we still don't, like, exemplify it. It's crazy.
Yeah. I think that if people would open their minds and look past the programming they've been given since they were born. They literally have been programmed since birth. Look past that and realize that you are part of something much bigger. And that should not make you feel small. It makes me feel large. It makes me feel like I'm a part of a galactic community. And there's wonders and amazing things waiting on me out there that I've never seen or dreamt of before that I can't wait to be a part of. And I think that's the mindset, that if people had that mindset, we as a species would be in a totally different place right now. I think that, you know, like I said before, people are born, they're given a name, they're given a religion, and they're given a race. And then they spend the rest of their life defending that. And it's programmed into them so hard that it's so hard to set it free, even though they realize deep, deep down, I think a lot of people would like to break out of it and realize that, or they contemplate at least that something's not exactly right with the way this world is and the way I'm living. But the programming has been so, you know, so strong, it's hard for a lot of people to break free. But fortunately for us, because of people like you, because of people like me and other people like us out there spreading a lot of information, we have been literally deprogramming people and reprogramming them to think for themselves. And that's why this consciousness movement is taking over this planet. So within the next couple of decades, I really can't wait to see where we are and how many people are awake, because once we get to a critical mass of awakened souls, we're going to reboot the entire economic system on this planet. We're going to get rid of all the elites. They'll be done, because there's only less than 100 families running this whole planet. We got 7.5. By then, we'll have 10 billion people. It'll be very easy to get rid of these people and take back control of this planet and install a system that works for the people, probably more like an anarchistic society, or a society that works for the development and betterment of each other and each self, and where people who are unable to provide for themselves are helped and assisted by others. And, you know, and your ranking will be how good you are at what you do. If you're an expert at this, then maybe you can ascend to the highest level of that, you know. So money is not going to be a real thing maybe at that point, or it'd be more of a barter system. But I really think that a system reboot needs to happen. And it will. I really do, because if you go by the yugas, you realize that we're in the silver age headed into the golden age. So it won't be too much longer, a few more thousand years before the golden age really kicks in, and people will be living 5, 6, 7,000 years, you know, free energy, green planet, the whole works. And that'll probably last for about 20,000 years or so before it starts to be sent back into the dark ages. But I'm just happy to be a part of this upswing that we're on and waking these people up and ushering in the golden age.
Now I'm going to say something that's going to sound controversial, but it's just one of the thoughts I'm having, like, while having this conversation with you. Mm-hmm. And it's something I kind of had a revelation on, like, a while back, and I'm just going to throw it out there. You know, you don't find Jesus carved in stone.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I say that is because of all the other history that literally predates papyrus or paper.
Yeah.
And we really have to look past like just that alone, the programming, the indoctrination, what we think of as normal, what we think of as what should be interpreted.
Mm-hmm.
If the main thing that is driving our spiritual foundation is literally written in paper and not carved in stone, which predates that paper,
mm-hmm.
we've got to ask a deeper question about what that means for us and what was so important that it had to be etched in stone. Not only in one place, but literally around the world, because they knew that there were people that would come through with dark intentions, like the people who went through and burned the Library of Alexandria. There were people that would come through that have dark intentions that would destroy this, that would separate us from our source, separate us from our history, because there's a certain power that comes with history. The same way we were talking before, you know, if you had 120 years on this planet, I'm sure you could figure out a way to reincarnate yourself, to have consciousness transference, to help in developing some of these higher spiritual technologies. But in a world to where it's just like, whoa, we don't want people being able to birth themselves. That's way too crazy. Let's just get them to eat some meat. You know, we'll stuff some chemicals in it. We'll do all this other stuff and we'll keep them there. But now, like I said, you know, we're moving into this system of renaissance. We're moving into this world to where it's like, they're trying to sell us free energy because they understand that it's humans that drive and work in harmony with the planet.
Right. Absolutely. There's no doubt. And that's why they're going to, you know, it's going to have to come out now. They can produce cars right now that don't need to plug in. You know, so I mean, they force Tesla to have a car that plugged into a power source for charging. We don't need to have that done. You can literally take all the braking power, all the energy from braking and convert it back into power. Stored energy. You don't even need to plug anything in. But they have a system, it's a trickle-down system, even with the free energy and electric cars and so forth. Because when you really think about a Tesla car right now, yes, you're driving on, you know, no gas, but then you've got to plug it in, which means the power station is using gas fuel to create the electricity that now you're plugging into your car. So you're still using gas no matter what. But we'll get to the point where it'll be a closed system in these vehicles, and it'll be a free energy type of a vehicle, or maybe it'll be a vehicle that has thorium combined with electric, and that way the thorium, which can, you know, 1 gram of thorium, you can drive around for 500 years. You know, so there's lots of different ways to keep it to where, it's amazing stuff, man. There's a lot of ways. The reason why they don't have thorium engines out here right now is thorium is a byproduct of nuclear waste, but it's the byproduct of nuclear waste that doesn't turn into uranium. It doesn't